Hello and welcome back to Better with Becky, a show for anyone on the journey to a stronger self and a better life. My name is Becky. I'm your host and happy February. We are somehow already a little over a twelfth of the way through 2026. I don't know how you feel about that, but I feel like that's a little wild and it snuck right up on me. And somehow it's been about a month since my last episode. So thought it was about time to check in, see how you are doing and fill you in on my life a little bit. And today I thought that I would play on my BWB acronym. BWB, if you're new here, stands for, depending on what you're talking about, Better with Becky, my business name, or Build with Becky, which is my strength training product. So I'll just briefly touch on that, then maybe talk about it again at the end, and you can check it out if it's something you're looking for. But basically, it's a program that kind of walks you through the major movement patterns, squat, hinge, push, pull, and some accessory work, usually the core and some aesthetic muscles like maybe the shoulders and arms or the glutes, and just builds a balanced and functional physique and helps teach you by applying the principles of progressive overload, how to start slow and grow as you go and get stronger over time. So if you're interested in that, that's the product, Build with Becky. It's a 5-week program and it's a subscription that comes out. It actually just came out today, so good timing. But then my overarching business is called Better with Becky, and I talk about all different ways of getting stronger, whether that's physiologically through that program or maybe mentally, emotionally, having a growth mindset. All of those things are so interconnected that I like to talk about all of them, and this podcast is kind of my outlet to do that. So anyway, BWB, we now have Build with Becky, the overarching umbrella company, Better with Becky. And I thought today's episode, we could use that first B to talk about birthdays with Becky. So basically, my birthday is February 4th. You're listening to a fresh-faced 41-year-old. I turned 41, I believe it was last week. I'm looking, maybe the week before. Time flies. And that's part of the theme of today, is like, time flies and birthdays, I don't know how you feel about them. Some people absolutely love them. Other people really are avoidant and dislike them and just want to be left alone. And I feel like there's everything in between. And maybe birthdays kind of change in nature from childhood to adulthood. But regardless, I think birthdays pretty naturally bring up a little bit of reflection on where we are in the journey of life at the age we find ourselves, and maybe a little bit of comparison, hopefully to ourselves, of like where we thought we'd be or where we would like to be. But I think sometimes too, it brings up comparisons that are less helpful, maybe externally to others or where they are and how we may or may not be lining up with their journeys, and if we feel behind, maybe those kinds of thoughts and feelings. So I thought that today I would open up a little bit about my own thoughts and feelings surrounding birthdays and kind of share some of my former and past experiences around birthdays, which, full disclosure, they have not always been an easy day for me for a multitude of reasons that we'll get into. And just, I'm going to put out there as a disclaimer right up front, this might go really smoothly, or it may bring up quite a bit of emotion for me. Sometimes even just like thinking about emotion brings up emotion for me. So doesn't mean anything has gone wrong. If you hear my voice wobble, if I mention tears, just stick with me, and maybe also see that as a little permission to feel anything that comes up for you. And maybe whether your birthday is coming up or has just passed, or even if it's almost a whole year away, maybe this is a good opportunity for you to reflect along the way about your own thoughts and feelings about birthdays, maybe aging, perhaps related emotions surrounding the idea of mortality and life and death and all of those things that another year passing can kind of bring up. So I'll share a little bit, like I said, about my kind of early birthdays in life and kind of my old stories and narratives surrounding special events like birthdays and holidays. And then I'm going to talk specifically about this year and highlight how I tried to shift my perspective, and I think was pretty successful in that reframing effort by choosing something different. And then I want to close with kind of encouraging you to do a little bit of self-reflection, whether that's around a soon to happen birthday or an event that's still months out that you have time to work with those thoughts and feelings. But I just invite you, like I said, to kind of listen to my story, and it may not be the same as your story, but it may give you a sense of permission to explore your own story, if that makes sense. So let's go ahead and get started. First, I'll talk about kind of my childhood and my former narrative around birthdays. Okay, so what really brought up the idea to do this episode was actually, as usual, a Marco Polo to a friend who also is a Sometimes Build with Becky member. Hey, Mel, if you're listening. And she was just so wonderful in generally just checking in with me, asking about my birthday, sending me birthday wishes on the actual day. But then I shared a little bit more of the vulnerable side of birthdays growing up, and it really seemed to resonate with her. And it made me realize, oh, this might be worth sharing more widely. This might be a common experience, or at least a relatable experience that might help other people process complicated thoughts and feelings that they also have. So I'll talk just a little bit about kind of growing up and my family of origin and how special events like holidays and birthdays were handled. So I was raised in what I consider a pretty fundamentalist Christian household, probably. If I had to guess, my parents would describe it more as an evangelistic household. I think that there's a thin line between evangelism and fundamentalism. And depending on how you experience it, it might feel one way or the other. But regardless, I was raised in a way that was very religion-centric. And it was really all I knew. And I was also the youngest of four children. Now, when I was very young, my dad was still in school. He was getting his PhD. So I imagine now, looking back, I'm not quite sure what the circumstances were, but he probably had some kind of stipend. And while that's great that schools sometimes provide a stipend when you're getting your PhD, that's usually for a single student. And that single student is usually still living quite close to the poverty line. And, you know, my father was married and had four children, so we did not have a lot of money. I remember at times hearing my parents discuss finances. We very often moved growing up, and this was maybe even after my dad had become a professor. To my understanding, and granted, childhood, so who knows if I understood correctly, but to my understanding, basically, he would try to get a raise, and there's just not a lot of money in academia and higher education. So his boss or his dean would say, well, maybe if you shop around and you get an offer from another school, maybe we can match that offer. So that's kind of how you get a raise, is trying to compare, oh, this other school wants me more and will pay me more. Will you match that? So he would go and interview, he would get a job offer, he'd bring it back, and almost always still no money in higher education. So his dean or his school would say, oh, I'm so sorry, we can't match that. There's no money for that in the budget. So, you know, good luck to you. And I don't know if out of financial necessity or out of a little bit of sunk cost fallacy, or maybe even like once you've psychologically decided you might leave a place, maybe you just kind of have to go. Regardless, we always would end up moving. So I moved, I think, 8 times growing up, always for my dad's work, to the extent that people started asking me if I was a military brat. And I was like, no, just a professor's child. And, you know, we always had like every need, like real physiological need met. I had clothes on my back. I had food to eat. And I think my parents really were doing their best. And I think that they were doing far better than, say, their parents did for them growing up. So I have a lot of understanding and compassion for that. But granted, the circumstances of my childhood were living without a lot of money as the youngest of four. And I think perhaps a mixture of factors made it such that that was a hard thing to talk about for my parents, probably, if I had to guess specifically, my dad. I think that there's probably just a lot tied up for all men in gender roles and providing for one's family and everything that goes into that. So again, a lot of compassion there. But I think instead of kind of having direct and maybe developmentally appropriate conversations about our circumstances financially as a family, it was instead similar. I feel it's kind of connected to the religiosity, similarly rigid and dogmatic. And I'm not saying all religion is rigid and dogmatic. That's kind of where that line of fundamentalism comes in my mind. My particular upbringing was very rigid and dogmatic in a lot of ways. And I think there was also just a lot of rigidity in all aspects of our family life. So, for example, around holidays like Christmas or special events like birthdays, there was just a built-in understanding that with four children and not a lot of money, there was kind of like a monetary amount in mind. So it was like $25 for birthdays and $50 for Christmas was the number that I always had in my mind. And, you know, that is still over the course of a year, let's say you have four children, $25 each is $100 in presents, plus maybe you go out to dinner. That's maybe $100 for a family of six. I'm not really sure at the time. So it's still, you know, $1,000 of birthday budget. And then probably similarly for Christmas, and that's a couple thousand dollars that you probably don't have. So completely now as an adult, I understand that and have a lot of understanding for it. And I also kind of feel like that probably could have been expressed in some kind of kid-friendly way that would have made sense. And also maybe instead of that rigidity that came through, holidays could have been made special in other ways that didn't involve finances. But that aside, that was kind of like the tone of birthdays. And in addition to that, there was a sense that, and it was like explicitly taught to us as well. So it feels to me now upon reflection as an adult, kind of indoctrinated into us that Christmas was Jesus' birthday. It was in no way about Santa. Santa did not exist. Children who wrote letters to Santa and wanted multiple presents were selfish and spoiled. And that was somehow less worthy and just not a good way to be. Period, the end. Like to the extent that I would go to school and we would have these little activities like writing letters to Santa. And I would legitimately be that kid who raised my hand and was like, but Santa doesn't exist. We all know that, correct? I just want to, you know, make sure everybody's clear. So I was like the kid ruining the magic of Christmas for other kids because I was so confused about how kids could believe in this thing that my parents were so rigidly firm on. And like literally we made a birthday cake for Jesus and sang him happy birthday. And that was the meaning of Christmas along with going to church. So that was Christmas. And then for birthdays, there was a similar narrative of, you know, children who have birthday parties and who ask for presents are very selfish and very spoiled. And we're not that kind of family. And in some way, like that somehow makes us better or holier or something like that. And I'm not sure if there's like a biblical basis for that idea or if that, again, is just kind of some kind of rigidity that comes through along with the rigidity that came with the religiosity. And again, that's not all religions. That was just my experience. I want to make sure I'm very clear on that. But regardless, I definitely learned that birthdays were kind of like, they weren't really days of celebration. And it was an interesting thing even to get invited to a kid's birthday party, because similar to not having the money maybe to host a party, it now occurs to me that might be one reason we never had parties. It also wasn't in the budget to just like buy a present for a different kid every other month when invited to a party. So I also wasn't necessarily allowed to attend birthday parties for other people. Regardless, over the years, you know, as a child, you kind of just try to make sense of your world. You don't really question it. You just kind of assume this is the way it is. You know, my parents are the authority. I believe them. I trust them. They're telling me what a good girl does and wants, and this would not be it. So, of course, I'm not going to explicitly admit to wanting anything beyond what is suggested is correct to want, if that makes sense. So anyway, all to say, I remember this kind of just continued my whole life. And then I remember there were times that, since I knew what was expected and the budget that was permissible, there were times that I would do something that Justin now calls open magazine girling. And it's kind of sweet, but kind of sad. And it's a good little shorthand for us to kind of call out, like, if I'm maybe hoping for him to read my mind or meet my needs for me, when really I'm the only one that can do that. And that's kind of where I'm going with this story, by the way. If you're kind of like, where are we going here? Eventually, I'm going to get to the takeaway, which preview of coming events is, I really don't think we can rely on anyone else to know our deepest wants and needs. And, you know, as children, I think it's fair that we kind of like hope to be seen and understood and loved, and that might come through in the form of gifts or special recognition of some sort, particularly on something like a birthday. Most kids love their birthdays, you know. But as an adult, I think that the reframe that I'll get to, and I'll dive into more detail in a bit about this, is really nobody can read our minds. Nobody knows the deepest desire of our hearts. Nobody truly understands what we want or need to feel seen and understood. But we do know that about ourselves, and we can actually give that to ourselves. So I'll get back to that idea. But regardless, first a little explanation of what is this open magazine girling thing. So basically what I would do as a young child, knowing the expectation, knowing the budget, we would get these little magazines around the holidays especially, and I would look through them and I would find something that I absolutely loved. And I knew it was outside of the budget. I knew it wasn't like something that was appropriate to want. It would edge into that, you know, being a selfish child who wanted more than was appropriate and would, you know, cause stress on the family. Which, side note, so interesting how perceptive children are. Like, I must have been 7 years old and I just knew I would never even ask for this, let's say, doll or whatever it was, because I knew it would be a burden on my parents. So what I did instead is I'd open the magazine to that doll and I would leave the magazine out and I would think to myself, oh, this is maybe how it's going to happen. Mom is going to see that magazine. She's going to stumble across it and she's going to open it up and think, oh, wow, look at this doll. Becky would love this. This is what I should get her for Christmas or for her birthday. I'm going to surprise her with this. It says Becky, something like that, I guess, is what my little girl brain thought. And instead, fast forward, I'd, you know, walk back into the living room a couple hours later. The magazine would either be put away or thrown away. I would try not to think too hard about it. Christmas would come or a birthday would come. I'd open up a box to find something that was absolutely not from the open magazine moment. Maybe was like a more budget-friendly doll that I just had no interest in, or something else. And granted, that is like a doll is a doll. Could I not just be happy with any doll? And honestly, I tried really hard to be, and I think I even fooled myself pretty often. And I know I fooled others. I think this is actually the origin of my deep pattern of people pleasing and performing for others. Because what does a good Christian, unselfish, unspoiled child do when she gets a $25 budgeted gift without any extra friends around to celebrate? She breaks into the widest grin and she oohs and ahs over it. And she's maybe so sad inside that to cover it up, she performatively pleases those around her so that they'll never see that. And maybe even does it so well that she kind of tricks herself into believing that her own wants and needs don't matter very much, and in fact can be pushed down and repressed all the way to the point of maybe not even feeling them anymore. Now, I didn't think much about this pattern because it was my norm. You know, I think in general, you grow up with whatever norm you grow up with and you think this is the world. You know, it's a little bit like that image of Plato's cave where, you know, if you're in the cave, you think that's the world. You have no idea until you leave the cave and see the reality of what the world really is. So like my family of origin and the situation growing up is my Plato's cave. I think this is the norm. I think these are typical practices until fast forward a couple years ago. I'm sitting in EMDR therapy. EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's a form of therapy where you kind of revisit difficult experiences, and then there's some eye movements that happen, and that kind of triggers the limbic system, which is like the deep lizard brain sort of, to reprocess the experience until kind of the spiciness or the trauma of it kind of dissipates. And we aren't even talking about birthdays or I don't think even really childhood necessarily. I can't quite remember. Like we're not processing a memory, but somehow that story about Open Magazine girling comes up. And my therapist just pauses the session and is like, whoa, 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 whoa. Pump the brakes. We need to take a step back here. We're not processing right now. I need to do a little bit of intervention and draw something to your attention. And I'm like, oh, okay. What's up? And she, you know, stops everything, puts down all her tools and just makes really clear eye contact with me. And she says, Becky, that way that birthdays were handled, even if there's, you know, all the compassion in the world for it, understanding for the context of it that you might have, that was not okay. The way that your parents handled birthdays. If there is one thing that well-adjusted parents pretty universally agree on, it is that they are so happy to celebrate their children. Honestly, every little development is exciting and worthy of celebration. When they sit up, when they roll over, when they laugh, when, you know, every little thing is wildly exciting. And when it comes to something as societally normative and accepted as, let's say, a birthday, they are so excited to say, everybody come, gather, celebrate. Let's acknowledge my child is a year older and is becoming more of who they will be in this world. This is so exciting. That is the norm for a birthday. And that was the first time that I really, like, something kind of clicked into place for me. And I realized it wasn't just about budget or finances or whatever all those kind of unknown to me factors were. It was really, I don't know if there was like shame behind the finances or if what it was, but there was something about the way that birthdays were handled that felt like they not only couldn't be a big, flashy, exciting, celebratory event, but that was in fact wrong or bad, when now I know to be true that that is the norm. And that is something that almost everybody just naturally wants to do, especially for a child. And then the tricky part beyond that was that, you know, after, you know, a lifetime of that being the norm growing up, then in adulthood, when my beliefs changed and I became agnostic and stepped away from religion, particularly in that fundamentalist sense that wasn't working for me within my family of origin, what happened then was that birthdays and holidays became the one time that I heard from my family, particularly my parents, particularly my father. And it was almost like, it felt to me, and I'm sure his story would differ, but it felt to me like in the course of daily life, he would kind of just, you know, understandably be doing his own thing, living his own life, not thinking too much about me. And then let's say Thanksgiving or Christmas or my birthday would come up. And those are times I think that it's natural that we think, let's, you know, reach out, call family, call friends, catch up, whatever. But what that actually, what the lived experience of that was for me was radio silence for weeks or months, followed by my dad reaching out on, let's say, my birthday, with the very insistent message in a very patriarchal way that I needed to revisit my belief structure or I was going to hell. So no contact, followed by fire and brimstone. And this continued for years. And multiple times I expressed displeasure at this pattern of behavior. I asked for alternate behavior. I tried to add boundaries to the relationship, which were definitely not honored because I was the child, he was the father. Who was I to try to tell him what the container of the relationship would look or feel like, regardless of the fact that I'm now a grown woman, regardless of the fact that I am clearly, compassionately, calmly articulating my wants and needs to feel mentally and emotionally safe in the relationship. And so eventually, years of this pass, and I come to realize that every birthday and holiday, I'm in this kind of defensive crouch, waiting to hear what terrible thing is going to happen and be told to me. And at some point, I finally decide this isn't working for me. This is not good for my mental health, certainly not good for my emotional health. And those tie into my physiological health. My stress is sky high around these days in particular, but kind of all the time, because I never know when these messages are going to come out of the woodwork. And that's when I do make the very difficult decision to go, I think it's called these days, no contact with my parents. And to this day, we are, I guess you would say, estranged. And it's interesting because obviously birthdays do bring up thoughts and feelings, and it can be really challenging. And I often will get messages from caring friends in particular, kind of asking if my family checked in, asking how I'm doing. And it's very interesting because I would actually say that since I put that final boundary of no contact in place and have stuck to it, things have gotten progressively easier and better, because now I am honoring my own needs and I'm doing what feels best for me after a lifetime of trying to please others and not rock the boat and keep the peace. And that was not an easy decision, and I took years to make it, and I did a lot of therapy, and I continue to revisit the decision, especially around my birthday, and reflect on it. But it all goes to show, like, there's a reason that birthdays bring things up for me. There was a whole childhood of confusion and strong kind of rigid messages around birthdays, followed by an early adulthood of kind of neglect partnered with traumatic experiences on those birthdays. So it's only natural that even now there's kind of an echo of those experiences every year when my birthday comes around. However, all of that said, this year in particular was a little bit different. So now I'm going to get into how I shifted and tried to kind of reframe this year around my birthday, given the context of what you've heard of my childhood and early adulthood and the kind of just chaotic confusion and I would say maybe like mentally and emotionally, at least manipulative, at times abusive nature around holidays and birthdays that I experienced and how I'm moving forward from there. Okay, so fast forward to this year, and Justin went to Japan mid-January. He was actually there for his birthday, which is the 15th of January. And he's doing a few things for our condo, which will be going to Japan end of April. And hopefully that will be done maybe June, July. But regardless, he's in Japan for the last couple of weeks of January leading up to my birthday, February 4th. And it's also that time of year. I don't know if you lived through this, if you're in the Midwest, of it was kind of like an ice storm followed by snowpocalypse, and it was just very cold, even in Florida. I think we got down to like the 30s, which is unheard of down here. And I just really got in my mind that I wanted to go to a warm, beachy place for my birthday. So I'm kind of like looking around. Florida beaches are just like not looking like they're going to be warm because of this situation. So I start looking in Mexico, and long story short, a friend of mine had been to Mexico the year before, stayed at a resort she loved, and that was actually in Cabo, but the same resort exists in Cancun, which is a quick 2-hour flight from Orlando. So I decide I'm really interested in this place, and then due to snowpocalypse, Justin gets delayed like 4 days coming home, and he's being very sweet and saying like, I'll try, I really don't know if I have the bandwidth to hop on another plane and take another international trip like 2 days after getting home from Japan, but I'll try. And I'm like, it's okay if you don't have the bandwidth. I don't want you to push it. And I kind of have the realization at the same time, I think I'd still like to do this. Would you support me doing this anyway? And he was like, absolutely, yes, you should do what you want to do. It's your birthday. I support you 100%. Go. And so I'm thinking about it and I'm like, yeah, I'll take a solo trip. That'll be great. And don't get me wrong, I do love solo travel to an extent. And then there's also this edge to solo travel after about 24 to 48 hours where like you like will see something cool and want to show someone, or you'll like laugh at something and turn to the person next to you, only there's no person next to you to share it with. And it can just be a little bit like, oh, I do wish I had some companionship now. So anyway, fast forward, and I'm talking about going solo, and the friend who suggested the resort is like, wait, we have a bunch of snow and ice days from teaching. Why don't I come? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I think I'm going to do a solo trip. And she's like, girl, what? You have a friend right in front of your nose who wants to celebrate your birthday with you, and you want to go alone? And at first I'm just like, hey, this is not about you. This is about me. And that's both true. And then I reflect some more and I'm like, but actually, do I want to be alone? Or do I just want some alone time in a week of feeling like I'm doing something for myself that I want to do? And I come to realize it's really the latter. So I'm like, yeah, come, let's do this. So we take this adventure, we hop on planes, we get to warm, sunny Cancun. And the thing that's really cool about this is I kind of had this moment, and this friend is a very special friend. Hey, Carrie, if you're listening. I met her back when I did my Fulbright to Ecuador and Peru. And we were studying indigenous Inca languages, Quechua and Quichua, and we were learning about the Andean Cosmovision. And I have a post I can link to in the show notes that's kind of like a reflecting back on the last 5 years. And I think the title is something like Walking Backwards into the Future or something like that. That's the idea anyway of the Cosmovision. It's that the past is laid out in front of you. So you can see it. It's happened already. So you walk forward into the past, but the future is unknown to you because you haven't experienced it yet. So it's behind you and you walk backwards into the future. And that's a little trippy, so don't worry too much about it. But basically, the reason I bring that up is that when I turned 40 last year, this friend had said something to the tune of like, I'm so excited for this to be your 40th year and for you to have all these experiences over the course of the year. And I found this journal that's very Andean and Cosmovision reflective, and I'm going to send it to you. It's going to be great. So this is like a year ago. And then here it is, almost a full year later, I'm about to turn 41 and we spontaneously decide to take this trip. And I learn, she tells me, you know, in my family, we celebrate the last day of being the current age more than actually the birthday. So I'm so excited that after a whole year, we get to be together on your last day of being 40 and that I can finally bring you that gift, that journal that I forgot to mail you, which total, I'm not throwing shade there, Carrie. I'm the same person. If I find a gift for someone, it will just sit in my office for 7 to 12 months until I finally figure out how to go to a real post office and send it to them. So no worries there. Side note, modern life. But anyway, this just feels very full circle, very meaningful. And I also, you know, I've mentioned this so many times on this podcast and in my writing on Becky Graham, but I love this one image of 4,000 weeks, this book that I've read where if you're lucky enough to live to be 80, you get 4,000 weeks. And basically that comes back to me too in this moment. And I think, wow, you know, just because the first 40 years of my life, birthdays were not fantastic, doesn't mean that the next 40 years have to be terrible. I mean, frankly, I probably should have realized this sooner. I've been a grown adult for at least 22 of these years, but whatever, late bloomer, whatever it is, I can decide now to do something different, to get something different. And so it's just this moment where I kind of am able to like let go of all of the hard, difficult, challenging feelings surrounding birthdays that I've had up to this point in my life. And also kind of acknowledge that along the way I was open magazine girling. And although that might be somewhat developmentally appropriate for a child, later as an adult, yes, we all have wounds. Yes, we all have traumas that we carry, big T or little T, however you want to frame them. But we do to some extent get to choose if we just keep telling ourselves that same narrative, that same challenging, traumatic, sad story, or if we decide to rewrite that story, to start a new habit, a new pattern, something that feels better. And ultimately, this is the same stuff that I talk about all the time with starting new habits and breaking old habits. This is just a trickier habit because it's a mental habit. It's an emotional habit. It's something that's been with me from my earliest days as a child. And so it feels like the air I breathe and the water I'm swimming in and just the reality of the world. But that's not actually true. That's just what my reality has been and what I chose to see as normal because I didn't really challenge that status quo. But now I can do that. And in fact, it feels really good to take that into my own hands and to choose what feels better. And the more I reflect on that, the more I'm thinking about how that's truly nobody else's responsibility. You know, I think there is something, even as adults, we all have these inner children, these parts of us that hope that somebody else will see us, understand, and read our minds, really, and somehow know exactly what we're thinking, feeling, and wanting and needing, which is wildly inappropriate if you pause and think about it for a moment. Like, I rarely know exactly what I'm thinking and feeling, let alone what I want or need in any given moment, let alone on a high stakes moment or day like my birthday. And yet I'm expecting someone else, a friend, a partner, a family member, to somehow cut through all of that noise and know me better than I know myself. That is ludicrous, actually. There's no way that that happens. And that's okay. Like, that's not a sign that they're a bad partner or that nobody understands you or that, I don't know, fill in the blank with whatever your story is on that. That's just obvious. You are the one who knows best your own wants and needs. And even then, sometimes it's incredibly challenging to know what those are or to clearly give yourself permission to have a want or a need and then let it take shape, even in your mind, let alone then clearly articulate it to someone else in order to bring it into reality. So all of that said, I just think it's a really interesting moment given it's Valentine's weekend. And, you know, Justin and I have been together for a long time, but we've never been the kind of couple that's like, we give each other flowers or chocolates or go out for an arbitrarily overpriced dinner on Valentine's. We just always spend quality time with each other. And that's something I love about our relationship because there's no like performative pleasing going on or almost like outward projection that feels like maybe it's actually for other people to see our couplehood and like approve of it or see it as a good union or something. It's just this sense of like feeling safe with each other. And I think a big part of feeling safe with anyone, whether it's a friend, a partner, a family member, is feeling secure enough to know that they are the experts on themselves and that you're just supporting along the way. And it's actually a relief too. Like, Justin doesn't expect me to read his mind and to meet his needs. Thank God, that's hard to do. Like, we talk all the time about how it's hard to buy gifts for men or something. But really, I think what's beneath that sentiment is it's hard to read people's minds. It's hard to meet other people's wants and needs. And if that's true when I'm thinking of Justin, that should obviously be true in reverse. I shouldn't be expecting him as my partner to read my mind and meet my needs. That's my task. That's my responsibility. And it's his task to support me in that and to cheerlead me along the way and, you know, be my safe home base to come back to or be along for the ride if and when that feels like something that he wants to engage in as well. So I think that it's an interesting weekend to talk about all this because one, it is, you know, still top of mind having been my birthday recently, but also like maybe Valentine's Day shouldn't be so much about this performative pleasing of another person. Maybe it should be more about this sense of deep security in a home base that then allows us to engage in whatever behaviors, practices, and patterns feel like taking care of ourselves deeply and a form of self-love that really no partner can give us. And that really we have to give ourselves to even feel full and complete to then be able to do our best to love another person. So I'm not sure if that quite resonates with Valentine's or not, but I can't help but think that although outwardly it might look selfish to do something like plan your own birthday, create your own circumstance, take a trip, whatever it is, I think it's maybe the least selfish thing I've ever done for my birthday, because it was finally me checking in with myself enough, reflecting enough, processing enough to recognize this maladaptive pattern that I've just engaged with as the status quo up until now, and pause enough to mindfully reset that pattern and choose something different and actually engage with my own wants and needs to a level that is very supportive and is very much practicing self-love in a way that nobody else could give me, even if I wanted them to be able to read my mind and provide that. I'm the only one that can really love myself in that particular way. So that's kind of my reframe of how birthdays went this year for me. And of course, I'm sure I'll still stumble and have waves and regressions and just, you know, sometimes I think there is a lot to the whole like psychosomatic, the body keeps the score. So sometimes I think like February comes around and my body does just kind of remember to brace as though I'm going to get a traumatic message from a family member, or somebody's going to forget about me and not celebrate me and I won't feel seen or loved or whatever. It's like my body expects that. But this year I was able to say like, hey, body, what do you actually need? What would feel safe and secure and like you're getting the love you need from yourself? Because I truly think that's the way we reset our nervous systems, is we feel deeply secure from the inside out, from a place of self-love and self-care. And then once we feel that security and that wholeness, and we heal those kind of hurt and, you know, sad inner child parts of ourselves, and we kind of show them, hey, look at my life now. Look how beautiful this is. Look at this loving partner I have. Look at the support I have. Look at how much I love this work I get to do and the people I help along the way. You're good. You'll never have to pretend to please or perform for anyone again. You can relax. You're safe. I'll never abandon you again. And we're the only ones that can do that for our inner child. As much as a partner might kind of see and know you have that inner child piece of you that's broken and hurt and needs healing and love, they can only do so much today for your current self and then hope it kind of trickles down to that inner child. But you can pause and you can go within if you're able to tolerate it. That's the tricky part. Sometimes it's really hard to actually slow down enough, and then it's even harder to be with a hurt part of yourself that it feels like has been overlooked by everyone and never had its needs met. Sometimes that's really hard. But if you can do that for yourself, it's kind of crazy how quickly that part can shift once it feels seen, once it feels safe. And, you know, who knows what that frees up in you. Once that child isn't like crouched in your inner psyche waiting to be hurt, maybe it feels free to go and be joyful and just change the whole energy of not just maybe your birthday or that special event, but maybe your entire life trajectory. Once you don't have these hidden, anchored inner child parts that are just like weighing you down with their sadness and their traumas, once you kind of unleash them and they can just go kind of like swinging about joyfully from tree limb to tree limb and living their best lives, imagine what that might do for your life now as a fully self-actualized, healed adult. So it's something to think about, you know? And I do think when I think of self-love, that I think of it in a lot of ways, but I definitely think like, yes, there's the sitting with your inner child. There's the processing, there's maybe journaling, there's meditation. But I personally have found over the years that I do better with making it active. So it's not just about nurturing my inner child, but it's also about then taking that healed inner child, harnessing that energy and joy, and actually investing in my own current and future strength and growth and curiosity moving forward about what's possible. And, you know, just kind of going back real quick to the first B of BWB, Build with Becky, that's exactly why I created this program. Because I think a lot of times we try to kind of leapfrog over those parts that we need to sit with and heal. And then when we first step out of them, we try to just leapfrog into being like an Ironman triathlete who is a power lifter. And there's nothing wrong with big, ambitious goals, especially in the long term. But I think in the short term, we have to like meet that inner child where it is and meet that newly healed self and build strength brick by brick as we go. So, you know, part of Build with Becky that I'm really proud of, and the newest program actually kicks off today, was just released. So if you're interested, it's perfect timing to explore it. But part of what I love about it is that it starts with this week that I call a baby giraffe week, where you're just kind of, you know, imagine a baby giraffe, you're wobbling around, you're finding your legs. It's a little tricky. You don't know exactly what to do. And that's what the first week of any program should be. You're finding the weights that feel appropriate for maybe like a 6 out of 10 rate of perceived exertion or RPE. Like you could probably do 4 or 5 more reps, but you're just getting the hang of it. So you leave it there for the first week. You just do a couple sets. Maybe you find where in the gym you prefer to do that work. It might be a barbell, might be a dumbbell, might be a band or a body weight form. And the program has 3 different options that you can easily swap in and out. And then, you know, the next week you build on that third set, and the next week you might bump the weight, and the next week you go for your personal best. And it's not going 0 to 90. It's going from where you are to the next logical step. And then from there to a little bit more. You want that minimal effective dose so that, frankly, not just physiologically are you building strength, but you're not maybe shocking your nervous system and then falling off really quickly. You're building not just strength, but self-trust along the way. So, you know, keep that in mind, because I think, again, going back to it being Valentine's, I really encourage you, kind of like how I challenged my assumptions and my stories about birthdays, and I'm choosing something that feels better. Why not challenge your assumptions about what you're capable of and encourage yourself to discover how strong you truly are? This particular program, by the way, side note, has an opportunity to test your 1 rep max of a few lifts if that's something you're interested in. And it kind of teaches you how to do that safely with a guided warm-up and warm-up sets, and then a 5-3-1 structure. So 5 reps, then go heavier, 3 reps, and then your heaviest effort of just 1 rep max. And the reason I suggest that now and then, not every time for sure, but now and then, it's really good to test ourselves, whether that's with a story that we have that we want to reframe, or our physiological strength or something else. But we don't really know what we're capable of unless we test ourselves. And to test ourselves, we have to get a little uncomfortable. We have to get out of our comfort zones. And that's where our edge for growth usually lies. And in fact, it's usually where we discover we are so much stronger than we think we are, inside and out. So, you know, what better Valentine's gift to yourself than committing to that kind of growth? If you're interested, again, you can go to betterwithbecky.com to check that out. But in closing, I have a few reflective questions for you. After having heard my story of my kind of childhood with birthdays, my reframe this year, the invitation for growth, I'm going to ask you a few questions that you can reflect on. All right. So let's just take a little mindful moment. And if it resonates with you, you might put a hand on your heart and maybe an inhale through the nose for three counts. And then a longer exhale. I always find that just taking one mindful breath, and even better if you have the time, two or three, is such a great nervous system reset. Now, here's a couple questions for you to get curious about when you think of could be birthdays, could be special holidays, anything that brings up a lot of emotion for you. First, when was the last time you put your own needs or wants at the center of a special event? When was the last time you put your own needs or wants at the center of a special event? And, you know, secret, if it's really hard to think of a time you've ever done this, you might be overdue. And extra secret, other people might prefer if you get clear on your own wants and needs. Truly though, you know, like I can't read Justin's mind. I love when he tells me what he wants and needs. I should absolutely do that for other people in return. Maybe you can too. All right, next. How might your celebrations change if you let self-compassion and curiosity guide you? Again, how might your celebrations change if you let self-compassion and curiosity guide you? And granted, I'm not you. I don't know when your birthday is or how you tend to feel about it, but I can tell you from my experience that this year, being curious enough to really explore what I wanted, and then having the self-compassion and care to actually acknowledge those wants and needs and back them up with action, changed everything. This was a birthday to remember, and one that I hope set the tone for the rest of my life. And last but not least, speaking of, what story from your past are you ready to rewrite, and what bold first step can you take? One more time, what story from your past are you ready to rewrite, and what bold first step can you take? That's something only you can know, but we all have stories in our heads about our lives, about our past. And if we don't occasionally revisit them, challenge them, and attempt to reprocess them, they really can dictate the actions we take and the results we get in our lives. So maybe spend a little time today, this week, this month, reflecting, if it helps as an example, reflecting on my early stories, what I did differently this year, and how that felt, and how it's maybe going to shape my future. And then allow that example to help you reflect on what are some stories maybe from your past or your childhood that you'd like to reframe somehow, and how might that shift things for you moving forward. Sometimes those thoughts need days or weeks or even months to kind of process and percolate, but I hope something in this episode was either relatable or gave you some permission to explore your own story, past, present, or future, and just empowered you to meet your own needs. Because as much as we can love to love others, love partnership, love a day or a weekend like Valentine's or Galentine's to celebrate the relationships in our lives, and those social connections do matter so much. First and foremost, the relationship that matters most for our mental, emotional, and ultimately physiological well-being is our relationship with ourselves, and negotiating and meeting and articulating our own wants and needs. So until next time, thank you for joining me on this journey to a stronger self and a better life. See you next time.